Anine, I'm Bear Dion. My dad's from Turtle Mountain, my mom's from Standing Rock. I come from Southside, Minneapolis, and I grew up in a place called Little Earth.
Seku, my name is Savannah. I'm 22 winters. I grew up in Southside, Minneapolis, and I'm from Oneida Nation.
Welcome to the Southside, Minneapolis.
Southside, we outside. Welcome to our podcast,
Sage in the City. A podcast from the youth perspective in the city where we spotlight community stories, traditions, and modern day events, exploring and talking about community issues and struggles.
Where you will hear from community members themselves, a podcast under Indigenous Protective Movement, aka IPM.
Today we're going to be talking about the term Two-Spirit and what it means. What does Two-Spirit mean? Before we get into it, we'd like to state that we don't know everything and we're learning as we go, so bear with us as some of this information is new to us.
And feel free to correct us or share your own information and stories down below in the comments. Two-Spirit is a relatively new term used by Indigenous people within Turtle Island who align with both the masculine and feminine worlds of gender and spirit. Two-Spirit people do not conform to rigid Western norms of gender and or sexuality.
The definition of Two-Spirit may also vary depending on the tribe.
The word Two-Spirit was created at the 3rd Annual Intertribal Native American, First Nations, Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Gathering in Winnipeg, Canada in 1990. However, the overall concept of Two-Spirit people have been around since way before the arrival of European settlers.
This reasoning is because of Pan-Indianism. They are anti-Pan-Indianism as they do not like us being grouped up together under one word or words. These individuals believe it strips our identity, sovereignty, and culture as keepers of Turtle Island. Alternatively, they prefer to be identified under their own tribe's terms and language as a way of keeping cultural identity and sovereignty alive. Many indigenous languages hold distinct terms for identity specific to their tribe, such as the Lakota word Winkte, meaning to be as a woman, and refers to two-souled Lakota people who transgress boundaries of gender.
Another term being Nadlehe, which comes from the Diné language of the Navajo people. Nadlehe is translated to those who transform and refers to one of four genders. Those four genders being masculine, feminine-masculine, and feminine-feminine.
Ojibwe Mon is another language which carries many terms for fluid identity and is also a gender-neutral language.
Dago Kwewe means woman's spirit within a man.
Dago Aniniwa, man's spirit within a woman.
Aniniwa Dize means has the nature of a man.
Akwewa Dize has the nature of a woman.
Embracing these terms affirms Indigenous identity and the resiliency of language erasure. It is a reminder that Two-Spirit people have always held recognition and honor in many tribes across Turtle Island.
In most tribes, but unfortunately not all, our Two-Spirit relatives are celebrated and viewed as gifted individuals who possess unique and sacred traits and powers.
Traditionally, they carried out sacred roles within their communities while being highly revered and highly respected. Their ability to embody both masculine and feminine energies gifted them with unique insights and perspectives.
They can choose their own gender roles. They were able to choose if they wanted to work with the men or if they wanted to work with the women because they both had a male spirit and a female spirit within them. They were also encouraged to marry whoever they wanted regardless of gender.
Their positions and duties consisted of knowledge keepers, spiritual leaders, medicine people, warriors, and mediators.
In some tribes, Two-Spirit people were seen as elite warriors for their abilities, as they were both masculine and feminine, being able to perform duties of traditional masculine roles and traditional feminine roles, as well as being able to think more openly and broader on the battlefield, thanks to being able to switch between masculine and feminine energies and mindsets.
This gift of dual energies and mindsets also enabled two-spirit people to possess balanced approaches in situations of conflict, acknowledging them as mediators and peacekeepers.
Their thoughts, decisions, and perceptions were highly valued. They were known for having a different thought process than regular people, and that's why they were so sought after, for how they think when it came time to make big decisions or meetings.
They were also known to be natural spiritual leaders and healers. Their enhanced gifts presented as a bridge between the spiritual and physical realms, allowing two-spirit people to be medicine people, shamans, and ceremonial leaders.
They were also sought after when it came time to find certain medicines that they were only able to see. One example is when medicines were looked for in the water that they were only able to see within the water a lot easier than regular people for what was being searched for.
These significant roles given to two-spirit relatives granted them as knowledge keepers and educators because of their special insight into cultural customs, ceremonies, and beliefs within societies.
These perspectives and responsibilities held by two-spirit members stood strong and secure for centuries leading up to colonization.
The arrival of European settlers deeply impacted the two-spirit community, especially with the establishment of residential schools where indigenous beliefs and cultural expression were rejected by colonial society.
Missionaries and priests approached two-spirit relatives with homophobic attitudes and forced them into heteroformative roles.
Due to these priests' homophobia, they ended up categorizing two-spirit individuals as birdash, which was a derogatory word which would still be used all the way up into the 2000s. Two-spirit was a word encouraged by many to replace this slur and get some sense of reclaiming identity within Turtle Island.
The church pushed Western norms of gender and identity, and if students were to turn away from these norms, they were shunned and abused.
Two-spirit people were labeled as sinful and unnatural under the control of the church.
These attitudes pushed by colonialism sparked a loss of respect towards the two-spirit people and built barriers preventing them to freely express themselves, causing loss of culture, leading to complete disconnection from their identities.
Two-spirit people would eventually lose their sacred roles and their belonging in society following colonization.
Systematic transphobia and homophobia developed through residential schools and continues to linger on in present-day society.
The stereotypes of them being unnatural or wrong are still prevalent within our own indigenous communities. Many are shunned or looked at like they don't belong.
Teachings and ceremonies, along with respect and honorings of two-spirit relatives, were lost through the impact of boarding schools, whose Western teachings still live on within modern-day churches, displaying the lasting impact of colonization and furthering generational trauma.
Current-day hostility and generational trauma inflicts mental health issues onto two-spirit communities. Lack of efficient health care and little access to culturally sensitive mental health services prone difficulty for relatives to heal and reconnect with their identities.
Suicide, along with drug and alcohol misuse, exists extensively within the two-spirit community at an alarming rate as a result of negativity.
For centuries, the gifts of our two-spirit relatives were highly honored, shown in a positive light. Now they have an increased vulnerability to hate crimes, harassment, and isolation.
This quote was taken from Two-Spirit Indigenous Healthcare and Cultural Humility article, Science Directive website.
The younger generation is reclaiming these teachings that were once lost, and by doing so, we are also claiming our identity, sovereignty, and culture. Thanks to this newer generation reclaiming these teachings, our Two-Spirit relatives are getting their voices back.
Another major reason why we have been able to reclaim these things is the power of social media. Before social media was around, some of these teachings were forgotten or lost in some tribes. Elders still have heavy trauma due to the boarding and residential schools. They were scared to teach what they were taught due to the trauma they endured. Some of these elders shared knowledge later on in life. Everyone was isolated on these reservations. Some of these teachings remained hidden for years.
Due to collective knowledge sharing, we were able to identify just how sacred the roles of our two spirit relatives are in our way of life.
To revive, we must decolonize our mindsets and pass down this knowledge to our future generations.
One way you can support our Two-Spirit community here in the South Side is by attending the annual Two-Spirit Powwow. The Two-Spirit Powwow is usually held in June during Pride Month.
You can also ask your own Two-Spirit friends and family how they would personally like you to show up and support them. Uplifting and embracing our Two-Spirit relatives is beneficial and truly does make a difference. So today we're here with Minnesota's biggest Janet Jackson fan.
That is awesome.
Please, can you introduce yourself for our audience?
Hello. My name is Jace Rowe. I'm also known on TikTok by Auntie Jace, and I work here in the community in Southside.
What does it mean to be Two-Spirit to you?
For me, first of all, I'm Northern Cheyenne also. I should have said that in my introduction. That's very important to me. For me, Two-Spirit is a role in community that is basically broken down as a helper in community and brings balance to the community and offers advice and lived experience. And that's what it means to me, at least. And that's what I do, or I try to do my best on my TikToks as well as in the job that I do in community and try to be available for community members.
Well, have you ever been to a ceremony where you had a position that was traditionally a Two-Spirit role?
You know, I gotta say that no, I haven't. And I did read this question and it kind of made me, I was like, oh man, I wish I did. But I come from a past where I didn't grow up traditionally. I didn't grow up with the teachings, and I did not have a lot of elders in my life to teach me these things. My mom went to boarding school, and so it was actually kind of discouraged to look into my spirituality. It was discouraged when I was growing up to stay away from it. And when I grew up, I grew up in a white person's house. We had like bells and trinkets around the house. We didn't have any native art. We didn't have any ceremony pieces. So I didn't grow up in our traditions or learning about it. So that's been a personal journey of mine that I've had to kind of undertake in my adult years. So unfortunately, no, but I look forward to it. There is a group right now called Indigiqueer Minneapolis, and they are coming together at our space. That's a space in Minneapolis, and we're planning a Two-Spirit sweat, actually. Wow. And there's a meeting actually tonight that I'll be going to and learning more about that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Thank you for that. So you said that you were like discouraged growing up, you know, so how did you like reclaim your identity back?
That's a great question. For me, I grew up, like I said, kind of disconnected. And for me, that included a lot of addiction. I grew up watching my elders, you know, drink, and I was encouraged to drink with them. And that carried over into my adult years. And so during my teen years, my 20s, my 30s, I was in the cycle of addiction. And that brought me down some really dark roads. I went to a total of 13 treatments. And each time I felt like I didn't fit in. I didn't feel like I looked the same as other people, or I went to a treatment center and I'd see somebody that doesn't look like me sitting behind the desk letting me know what I needed to do to get sober. And it just never really clicked. What happened with me is that I ended up going to a place up north in Duluth called the Thunderbird. And that is a treatment center up there. And that is for Native men and women. And I went there, and it was the first time I actually was in an environment where I was surrounded by other Natives who were looking for recovery, who wanted to be sober, who wanted to change their lives. And I was accepted. I want to cry right now, actually, because it brings back really good memories. And it was the first time I was around our people, and I felt accepted. And this one had to be when I was like 38. I'm turning 50 in a couple months now. But I felt accepted. And I remember they took us to a powwow, the Meshkauzen powwow, the MASH powwow. And I remember remember sitting and watching the grand entry, and I watched just the whole thing. And for some reason, when they had the elders come into the circle, I just started breaking down and I cried. And I cried because I was watching the elders and I thought about all the things that they've been through in order to get to that point right there, and all the things that they've been through in order to have us be there. And something just clicked in me where something inside my head told me it was time. It was time to like return, and it was time to find out what it means to me to be Indigenous and to find that pride and to be proud of it. And so that would be my journey. And like I said, that was about 12 years ago, actually. 12, 13 years ago. Gosh, it was a while ago now. And that helped me feel like I wasn't an outsider anymore, because I always felt like an outsider looking in. And that just changed my whole life around, where I felt like I was a part of a community, and I was around other people that had similar experiences as me, and I didn't feel as alone, and I didn't feel like an outsider. And that would in turn help me learn about Two-Spirit and what that meant. And to me, that felt really empowering, because here I was, I always felt like an outsider, and I always felt like I was less than. I was told I was a sinner. I was told that all these bad things just because of who I am, and including being Native. And so going to that treatment center and learning about our traditions, learning about what it means, it changed my whole life around. And it would start my journey into like real recovery, where I felt proud of who I am, and I started accepting myself. And that, I think, is a huge hurdle for a lot of us, accepting ourselves and finding out who we are, you know, and loving ourselves.
What is your role in community, would you say?
You know, I've worn many different hats since I've been in the community. You know, when I came into community, I became really involved in activism. As we know, AIM has a huge voice down here, which is amazing. And that gave me a sense of pride. I was really big into when we had changed the name for the Washington team. I did a lot of activism around that. I also have done a lot of outreach with our unsheltered, and that really got to me, because I was able to see other people who were going through the same struggle that I went through in my addiction. And so that really took up a lot of my time, and that would lead me going to college and to be a drug and alcohol counselor. And that's what I do today. Is I work at We Know the Way. It works with Red Lake and NAC Clinic. We have a IOP here in Minneapolis, and we're a harm reduction focused treatment center. And I'm one of two counselors there. And I love my job. I love helping our relatives. I love watching them grow and letting them know that, you know, recovery is a personal journey, and people need to find out what works for them. You know, it can be 12 steps, it can be wellbriety, it can be harm reduction, it can look many different ways, and I'm just there to support them and show them love and to hopefully guide them in a good way, you know. And so right now that is my role. And like I said, I am also getting involved with the Indigiqueer community as well, and forming that sweat and supporting them in any way that I can. I'm definitely not in charge of it, so I want to make sure that's said, but I just want to be a helper among helper these days.
Thank you for what you do, you know, in the community. You know, that doesn't go unnoticed or anything. Also, I know you kind of talked about this already, but what have been some challenges you face being on the Red Road and being a Two-Spirit person?
You know, I think that our community, our Two-Spirit community, our Indigiqueer community is strong here. But I feel like sometimes there's a lot of, there may be infighting like any community, right? And I think once we get over that, I think once we come together, I think that we grow stronger from it and we learn from it. For me personally, you know, I think just putting myself out there and continuing on the path and believing in myself when I go into community, that is kind of my biggest struggle, really. It's usually myself more than anything or anybody. But I love the community here, and I love that it's growing bigger and bigger, and people are becoming more open and visible, because I do believe that representation matters, especially to our youth, and especially to anybody who might be questioning themselves or feeling like they're being left out of community. Letting them know that there is a spot for them, and it's a safe space for them to come out and to be a part of.
I hear you're pretty big on self-care. What does that mean to you?
That means that to find balance between my mental health, my emotional health, my physical health, and creating balance between all of them, and paying attention to my triggers, and so I can be the best helper that I can in community. If I'm neglecting myself, if I'm neglecting my mental health, my work is going to suffer, I'm going to suffer, and I can't let that happen personally to me, because with my history of addiction, usually that would have been my go-to to relieve those things. So today, finding spirituality, making sure that I'm praying in the morning, making sure that I'm smudging, making sure that I'm going out in nature, and really appreciating all the gifts that Creator gives us each and every day. Like the sun, it's a beautiful day out today. It is gorgeous. The sun is shining. The birds are still around. I have tons of squirrels and bunnies in my backyard lately. And just taking time to slow down and recognizing that, I think is really, really important. And then also nutrition, right? Making sure that I'm eating right, making sure that I'm not denying myself that, because I can go a whole day sometimes without eating, and by the afternoon I'm just like grumpy and I'm irritable and I'm like, wait, did I eat? And that's usually sometimes the key. And making sure that I'm eating healthy foods too, and watching my diet. As I get older, I need to be on top of that. And then also sleep. Sleep is very important. Making sure that I'm getting enough sleep. Otherwise, the next day I know that I'm going to suffer and I won't be my best self. I won't be the helper that I want to be at work or for, my family at home.
Yeah. That's some good advice.
Thank you.
So from personal experience, what would you say to other youth or people who are struggling with like reclaiming their two-spirit identity, or just some advice that you have for them?
I would say, first of all, I think that loving yourself and accepting yourself is huge, and I think that's such a huge process in itself, especially if you come from a broken home or you come from an environment where that isn't encouraged. I think finding out about who you are and your traditions and your culture and what your roles were, because the roles were different in each tribe, it wasn't all just the same, and not every tribe had acceptance for two spirits. I want to make sure that that's clear as well, but reaching out to local organizations, people that want to help, people that accept you, and taking that risk. And because I think that no matter where we go, there we are, right? We're always going to be ourselves. And I think the sooner that we love ourselves and the sooner that we accept ourselves and we take care of our spirit, the more we're going to be able to grow. And I think that it just starts within. It starts within ourselves, that acceptance and love, and then it can ooze out to everybody else. But I think that's a big part of healing, is that self-acceptance and that self-love, because if you accept yourself and you love yourself, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, because everybody's going to always think something different, or there's going to be people in the world that don't like you just for being yourself, and that's on them. It's not on me to convince them that to like me. That's one thing that I've learned really on my path, is it's not my job to make anybody else like me or love me. If I can just be myself and go out into the world and do my best every day and watch what I say, the rest is going to fall in place, and the people that love me are going to show up, and I don't need to chase love today because I know I'm loved,
So how do you think you like maintain that mindset, or like maintain that good energy despite the opposing spirits or whoever that comes along?
Daily practice, meditating every day, you know, praying in the morning every day, like I said, like smudging every day, taking care of my spirit. That comes first. If I'm frustrated or if I'm upset, I'm grateful to live close to Minnehaha Falls. And so I'm able to go walk by the falls, go walk down by the river. I sit by the water. I have a couple of trees that I visit down there and that I love. And I know, hear me, and I talk to them and I leave whatever I'm holding on to there. And I know that it can absorb that energy and know that everything always just works out. It always just has a way of working out. And I know also that I cannot control people, places, or things. I can control only my reaction to the events happening around me. And that plays a big part in acceptance. And I think that is key, like acceptance, you know, it is what it is. And I even have a tattoo that just says it is what it is to remind me, you know, just radical acceptance, you know. So that works for me.
Yeah, I love that. I love your way of thinking. Like, you're very positive, and I can tell you've done a lot of inner work. So the next question I have is, like, what advice do you have for others on the Red Road Recovery?
This question. Find what works for you. Find what works for you. I think that is the biggest thing. I think that don't compare your recovery to anybody else's recovery, because your recovery is going to be different than anybody else's, and that's okay. As long as your life is improving, and as long as you're happy with yourself, you have a relationship with something bigger than you, and it's all good. Like, that's what matters, I think. You know, I think far too often on my journey, I always compared my recovery to everybody else's. Like, I would see somebody excelling at their recovery, and I'm like, man, I want that. What's wrong with me? And it would always boil down to me, right? Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get that? Well, you know, everybody has different starting points in their recovery. Everybody has a different past. Everybody's dealing with their own stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that once we realize that, or once I realized that, it really opened up the door for me, and it was easier to find recovery. For me, I practice harm reduction. I started out going to 12-step meetings. I was there for a few years, and then I kind of got in that same cycle where I felt like I needed something more. I needed to find something. I just wasn't, it wasn't clicking. Went through Wellbriety, did that program as well, and then found the culture, right? That plays a huge part. But also, finding just what works for me is the best thing. And it doesn't always have to be 12-step meetings. It doesn't have to fit the norm. It can be whatever. There's like a recovery gym. A lot of people work out and find recovery that way. But I think at the end of the day, that's what I tell a lot of my clients. Find what works for you. I will support you, because it's your journey. It's your life at the end of the day. And you're not doing recovery for anybody else except yourself at the end of the day, and Creator. And that's really my biggest piece of advice, is it's okay to be different, you know? Mm-hmm. It really is. Not everybody's the same.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, traditionally, our two-spirit relatives were very, very much cherished, and they play, like, big roles in our community. So what, like, from your perspective, why do you think two-spirit, sorry, what was it's the all right. question? Sorry, 1 second.
It's okay.
Oh, why do you think it's important to embrace or acknowledge our two-spirit relatives?
To break the stigma, to break the violence, to break the lateral violence, to save lives. You know, two-spirit people, a lot of the times, statistically, have one of the highest self-harm rates. And I believe that's because of the stigma and of the bullying and of the non-acceptance, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have anybody to talk to. They don't have anybody to turn to. So I think, like, it's really important, like I said, to have representation. That's why I'm here today. And I think it's really important to learn about Two-Spirit or Indigenous queer people and to accept them into the circle. Because for me, it kept me out of the circle for a long time, that self-fear. And feeling not accepted. And I think that it's important. It really is suicide prevention. It really, really is in my eyes. And it saves our community a lot from other two-spirits or Indigenous queer people turning to addiction, right? And mm-hmm. falling into that cycle. I think it breaks that. Because if we love ourselves and we feel accepted, we're going to grow, you know? Right. So I think it's very important.
Yeah, so in what ways can people, especially those who don't know much about the Two-Spirit community and what it means, how can people support you and other Two-Spirit relatives?
I think learn about it, accept us. Go, there's in Minneapolis, they started I was not again a part of it. I was a helper, but there was a Two-Spirit powwow that happens every year. And I think, you know, if there's events like that, coming out and supporting community, learning about it, shaking hands, doing your own investigation work, tuning into podcasts like this and learning and being open-minded to it. And then just, you know, talking to others. I think that is a huge help, right? Because I think our community is pretty small, and there more than likely you do know a Two-Spirit, you know?
Yeah,
so I think acceptance and inclusion is huge, you know, to breaking that stigma.
Yeah, for sure. My last question is, do you have anything else that you would like to say to whoever's watching?
Hey, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Nais. I really do appreciate this opportunity to come and talk and speak. I was honored. I think it's amazing what you two are doing on this podcast and getting
thank
out
you.
The word
thank
about
you, thank you.
Community and Minneapolis. And it reaches a lot of different formats. And I just want to say thank you. And if you are Two-Spirit, know that you're not alone and that you are loved and that you have a spot in the circle. I'm going to cry.
Okay.
Check me out, Auntie Jace on you know, TikTok, and you know, I go live every morning and I try to include everybody, and I'm here for you. So that's what I got.
Yeah, thank you for that. We really appreciate it, and thank you for being on here and coming on with such good energy and such good words. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank both of you.
Some really good advice.
Thank you.
These genuine, gifted souls were sent here for a reason, to teach us something, to humble us so we can be more respectful to others, especially when we meet other people, to accept the differences in them compared to us. And just like Sage, we don't just grow on the res.
You can always find Sage in the city.